show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Folks, we've got some less than positive news to discuss this week, but it's the big news in Royals baseball. But before we get to that, of course, the man who is always big news and always with me, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this? It's still cold.
It's still cold. Yep. I'm making it. I'm here. Ready for it to get warm and ready for some baseball. So that's about it. Yeah, I'm tired of it being cold. It's probably going to snow again this weekend. I haven't looked. Wouldn't surprise me. Whatever.
It's actually supposed to be quite nice.
Sweet.
It's supposed to be like 58 on Saturday or something.
What?
So,
is that allowed?
Yeah. No joke.
We're
I know,
gonna get
right?
3 feet of snow on Tuesday.
I didn't think that was a thing anymore, but today it's supposed to start warming up and then 55 on Saturday. But yeah, this is the last day, at least on according to what I'm looking at, the last day where the high is below 40.
Well, hot
for
dang.
The next week. So look at that.
We might make it through an entire era. Week without a school cancellation or delay in the Kansas City metro area.
What a time to be alive.
It only took 6 weeks, 6.5 weeks of school.
That groundhog is full of shit.
It's true.
I wonder if the groundhog knows about global warming. Is he you think groundhog is a climate change denier, perhaps? Maybe that's what he's doing.
Might be.
I don't know.
Not
the topic to discuss on this show.
No.
Anyway.
I haven't thought that far on the groundhog.
So, first things first, the biggest news of the week, the baseball fates took a trip to Arizona and they spun the wheel of Tommy John. Wheel of Tommy John, turn, tell us whose season you will burn. And this year it is Salvador Perez. Very unfortunate news, kind of obviously like most Tommy Johns, comes out of nowhere. It's especially difficult to stomach when it is not a pitcher, just because you don't really think of it as something that affects non-pitchers, but of course it obviously does. And here we are. So Salvador Perez will miss the entire season. He has had Tommy John surgery. That's kind of that. Now, the big question is, obviously, what are the Royals going to do to replace him? Number one, to replace his production, we've made some comments and had some topics to discuss his second half slides in the past for his offensive numbers. But even still, he has consistently been one of the most offensively productive catchers in baseball the last few years, just because it's not typically a high offense position, really. So it's he has a lot of impact on the game. He's hit 20 plus home runs the last like 3 years, I think, and then he usually is in that 80 RBI range, 60 to 80 RBIs, decent amount of doubles. His on base is low, we've talked about that, but he is what he is at this point. And then obviously he provides good defense. And, so how is that going to be replaced? Question number one. And then question number two is, Salvi is the kind of spiritual leader of the team. I think he's been that way since he really got up, once he started the Salvi splash with the Gatorade bucket and then through the World Series years. He was a World Series MVP in 2015. And, he was definitely one of the prime leaders on the team. And, I think you have your, depending on the team, of course, you kind of have different – you can have multiple leaders, and You can have your kind of let's get down to business leader, the guy that everyone follows when it's time to really buckle down, and then you have your guy that really keeps, you know, everyone loose and keeps everyone ready to play and having fun and still enjoying what they're doing, you know. And I think whether you want to say it's Alex Gordon or Eric Hosmer was that kind of for that era was kind of that, you know, let's get down to business type leader, lead by example type. Salvador Perez, I think, is inarguably was the spiritual leader at that time, just given keeping everybody uplifted, keeping everybody, you know, enjoying and having fun playing baseball. And I think when I think about the quote from Moneyball, you know, how can you not be romantic about baseball? It's hard not to think of someone like Salvador Perez because you think of, like, you know, when you look at him and you see him play, like, how can you not have fun playing baseball when you're playing with a guy like that, you know? And that's important. So how does that get replaced? How does that element of the team get replaced? I mean, I think I actually heard a similar question proposed to JJ Piccolo this morning on the radio on A10. And, you know, the answer was that, well, you know, in Salvi's case, he's someone who's still going to be in the clubhouse. So sometimes, yeah, when a player is injured, you know, it's just better if they're away from the team, et cetera. But excuse me, Salvi is a player who's going to be in the clubhouse still. So, you know, that's good for what it's worth, but it's still hard to truly be that leader when you're not out there with them in the trenches, so to speak. You know, you're in the dugout. You can console players when they are having a rough day or et cetera, but it's still tough to really kind of be, you know, when you're not out there with them every pitch, when you're not, you know, calling the shots on the field, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really going to be quite curious how they replace Salvi, because he's been such a big part of this team for the better part of a decade now. And yeah, he's a big loss. So I'll, you know, that's definitely curious. I mean, when you first heard the news, what were your thoughts? What was your first thing? Like, oh no, how are they going to do this without Salvi?
Well, I mean, the main thing is that they don't have, you know, really a clear backup catcher. I mean, Cam Gallagher's there, and ever since they traded Drew Butera late last season, he kind of was jumping up and they were ready to give him the opportunity. And I think he's definitely going to be a big part, but it was like, this is, like you said, this is a team where now there's a pretty big vacuum. I mean, you look around the diamond, you've got, just on the infield, O'Hearn and Dozier on the corners. You've got up the middle. Yeah. Whit Merrifield's been around a couple of years, but Alberto Mondesi at shortstop, you know, is taken over for Alcides Escobar. So there's not a lot of experience there. You have Brett Phillips, who just came over last year. You've got Brian Goodwin, who came over last summer. Billy Hamilton is just signed with the team. Jorge Soler has been around, but not a ton, you know, hadn't been on the field. So it's really Alex Gordon and Salvador Perez are the guys who are out there and who are able to kind of fill that leadership role. And even while Sal's going to be there, yeah, that does take a lot. Like, he's the heart and soul when they go onto the diamond. He's got so many innings, you know, thousands of innings so far in his career, and he's not even 30. So that puts them in a position where now the pitching staff is going to have some difficulties adjusting too, because they're going to be throwing to someone completely different for the entire year. So there's a lot of different areas where it hurts, but it's also tough. You know, Sal Perez, for all of his on-base problems, for his career, he's a .266 hitter. He's a guy who slugs about .442. There's not a lot of catchers out there who can, you know, hit .260-ish and hit 50 extra base hits every year and play Gold Glove defense. So there's a lot of elements that need replaced here. And Cam Gallagher, you know, we'll talk a little more in depth on both the Royals in-house possibilities, but Gallagher has some very good qualities to his game, and Mabrus Valoria has some good things about his game too, and some interesting parallels to Salvador Perez as well, but they're still not the same guy. And so, you know, there's a lot that is kind of missing going into this year, and especially with a really young pitching staff. So it's a little bit of everything. I mean, that intangible leadership quality, that handling of a pitching staff and a young pitching staff, at least starting wise, and plus some other guys who are younger with the chance at the bullpen, and just the literal on the page production. It's there's a lot. I mean, he's their guy. He was, you know, one of their key contributors at a time where they had a lot of veteran players and a lot of really good veteran players. And so with him being one of the few that are still there from that time, and now he's going to be out, it is, it's a really big hole to fill. You know, so the Royals have to really evaluate how they're going to do that. And they have options, but yeah, I mean, it's a very, very tough spot to kind of fill in, especially when it's somebody like Sal Perez, multiple gold gloves, multiple all-star games, and just such a big presence in the lineup, on the field, in the dugout, and all of that. So it's a really big loss. It's there's a lot of tough ways to, you know, that I think Sam Mellinger maybe wrote this, or maybe it was Lynn Worthy, who's the new beat writer at the Star, but it was like, would you even really notice, you know, if this team, you know, there may be a 90 loss team, would you really notice two fewer wins based on, you know, wins above replacement? No, probably not. But there is some trickle down. There's less protection in the lineup, if that's really a thing or not. You know, that takes away your number of 3, 4, or 5 hitter, where you need someone to step up to that. There's handling of those young pitchers and, you know, kind of being that guy to be who they can look to when you got a lot of rookies on the team. So, you know, it's going to be seen, and I think it's going to be felt all season, even if the Royals aren't that good record-wise. You know, as far as everything that goes into a baseball game and a baseball team, yeah, it's a really big loss.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. You know, there's just kind of to outside the context of just what happens on the field every game, you know, it's just Salvador Perez, you know, not only is he just so great because of how effusive he is, but it's also like he's been one of the great Royals success stories, just because he was, you know, was this guy that the Royals really liked, that they signed when he was really young, and, you know, not a ton of, you know, publicity around him, but he just kind of came on like a storm. And you know, this is certainly not the end of his, you know, Royals career, but you do wonder after a Tommy John surgery, just like any pitcher, you know, are they going to be the same, especially when, even though it's easier for a position player to recover just because there's not as much wear and tear on that elbow, you know, at the same time, Salvador Perez, one of the main reasons that he's getting those gold gloves and that he's been so good and defensively is because of his arm. The snap throws to first to try and get people that are leading off or being lazy about getting back to first, you know, those great throws to second to pick off the runners, etc. Those, you know, you got to wonder what those are going to be like. Now that's, you know, 2020's problem and not 2019's problem, because it's more about who's going to replace him. But it's, you know, those, all those thoughts, I'm sure, come flowing through people's heads in the Royals organization as they talk about, you know, what this means for the future of the organization and for Salvador Perez. So, I guess we can kind of talk about the replacements there. You kind of hit on a couple of them that the Royals have in house as possibilities. So if you had your way, would you pick one of those, you know, Gallagher, Valoria, one of the in-house candidates, or do you think there's somebody out there on the market that you'd rather have? You know, do you think they should go make a trade? What's your dream scenario? We'll start there and then we'll kind of work our way back to what we think might actually happen for how they go about it.
I'm not sure. I mean, if this had happened maybe a week ago, there might be an opportunity for the Royals to get Matt Wieter. Well, I don't know when Matt Wieter's actually signed. He's on a minor league deal with the Cardinals. And, you know, Wieter's, he's had Tommy John surgery himself also. And he hasn't been the same hitter. He also hasn't been the hitter that was expected when he got drafted. But I don't think defensively it's really impacted him as much as maybe you would kind of think. Like, it's, you know, generally he's very similar to the same type of catcher and same type of throwing arm as before. The track record, there's not a lot of catchers who've had Tommy John surgery. There's not a lot of position players who've had Tommy John surgeries, especially when compared to pitchers. So it's tough to compare. you know, it's kind of slightly uncharted territory.
There's not as much data out there.
There just isn't. Vance Wilson had Tommy John surgery twice when he was a catcher with the Tigers. He's the bullpen coach for the Royals now. So there's, you know, he's definitely going to be someone that I'm sure Salvador Perez will be working on as far as rehab and schedules and staying on track and things like that. But, you know, the number one name that's out there is Martin Maldonado, who is 32. He won the Gold Glove a couple of years ago. He had, you know, modest power. I think he hits, you know, prorated about 14 homers per 162 games, and he hit 14 homers the year he won the Gold Glove. Not a great hitter, you know. He's going to hit 220, doesn't get on base a ton. He doesn't have the power that Sal Perez does, but honestly, not a lot of catchers do. That's why Salvador Perez is, you know, such an extraordinary guy. But he was like within an hour of the news that Sal was getting a second opinion. He was the guy that everybody was talking about, and John Heyman said that the Royals had already contacted. As of tonight, as of at least an hour ago before we started recording, they seem to be like they're far apart on what the actual numbers would be, you know, contract-wise. Maldonado still, you know, even 3 weeks before spring, doesn't have a team. But, you know, I feel like they're going to go with some kind of a veteran just because between Gallagher and Valoria, there's 45 total major league games between them. And with Valoria, his 10 games with the Royals last year, late in the year, are his only 10 games above high A in his career. So that was a jump on its own. And now to ask him to be like a full-time or even halfway catcher at the big league level, that's a pretty big ask. You know, maybe he can pull it off. But I don't know. I think Maldonado is probably the guy. He makes the most sense. I do think that when you've got someone like Junis and Keller and Jorge Lopez and Heath Fillmyer and all these other guys that, you know, are going to be young pitchers who you expect to be around, it probably will help to have a veteran around just to pass on whatever wisdom he has from the game and just make it easier to kind of manage those games with those kind of players. So I think he's the main guy. Evan Gattis is out there. He's more of a DH than a catcher. He can catch. He has played catcher, but he's a DH. He's not really a catcher. I can't imagine the Royals going that route. There's just not a lot. I mean, a few guys who might be out there who are on minor league deals at big league camps. Butera is certainly possible. You know, he's on a minor league deal with the Phillies. The Phillies went out. They traded for JT Realmuto earlier this offseason ahead of their signing Bryce Harper. We didn't cover that. Hey, Bryce Harper signed. 13 years, go figure. So Butera is not going to start in Philly. There's a decent chance he might get cut. He could end up back on the Royals. They're obviously familiar with him because he's been around for a while. So that may be an option. That may even end up being the most likely option if Maldonado doesn't, you know, lower whatever his asking price is. Yeah, but even guys like, you know, Devin Mesorosco is someone who's been pretty productive. He's on a minor league deal with the Mets. Nick Hundley has been a pretty decent kind of part-time catcher for the most part. He's in A's camp, and they have a couple of guys on minor league deals out there. So those are possibilities. There's also some potential. The Brewers went out and signed Yasmani Grandal this offseason, but they went into the playoffs last year with Eric Kratz and Manny Pena, both former Royals. So I imagine if either of those became available, they both played pretty well last season as, you know, guys who traded off. I could definitely see the Royals going for either one of those guys. So, I mean, it's possible they've got some options out there if, you know, they decide to not, you know, stick with the two guys they have. And Clint Scholes has said quite a lot in the last week that it's probably also going to help to get a veteran at least to be in AAA so that if you do need to call somebody up, you know, they're available, just because, like, you know, the Royals just, they've got a lot of really young and good catching talent. MJ Melendez is really good. Sebastian Rivero played really, really well last year too. But those are both guys who played in Lexington. So, I mean, they're probably both going to be in Wilmington. That's still too big of a jump. Other than them, you've got, like, Nick Deeney, who's, you know, 25. He's been between AA and AAA a bit. And Xavier Fernandez, who has been around a little bit too. But none of those guys are really all that seasoned. So it does make it difficult to say that, you know, they're going to be able to jump up also. So you, I mean, you could possibly end up with a whole bunch of rookies just rotating in and out all season at catcher this season and just see what happens. But I really think they're going to sign a veteran in some capacity. I don't know if that's a dream scenario. I mean, there are arguments, I think, to just platoon Cam Gallagher and Mabrys Viloria. The Royals trust both. They both, you know, have some pretty good elements to their game. The Royals could probably pull it off. It seems off brand though for the Royals to just give it a shot with two rookie catchers. They sure seem to really like veterans in some of those positions, and it sure seems like for now to replace a really big veteran, that's my lean, that they would want to go that way. I think ultimately they will get Maldonado, but, you know, until they do, it sure sounds like they're willing to go with Gallagher and Viloria.
Yeah, I mean, I think the MO for the Royals is definitely the quote-unquote, you know, experienced veteran. So that's definitely what I think is the most plausible as well. I definitely think you're on the right track there. What I would love to see, though, is to go for one of those. You know, do they think one of the in-house options are the answer? You know, do they think Cam Gallagher is the catcher of the future? Who knows? Most people don't seem to think so. But you know what? If you're going to figure it out, this is the perfect opportunity, because you're not going to put Sal. You're not going to put Sal on the bench to see what kind of a catcher you've got, just in case. And you know, you still got years left on Sal, especially, you know, assuming he makes a full recovery from Tommy John, which at this point there's no reason to expect any different. Yep. So,
and he'll have a full year of not crouching for 900 plus innings. So
exactly, I mean, especially a good for a year that's not going to amount to anything.
Yeah,
you know, it's a wasted year essentially in terms of the wear and tear that someone like Salvi's going to put on his body. So, you know, to find that guy who can, especially if you can find someone, you know, maybe Cam Gallagher shows that he's not an everyday catcher, but he shows he can hang in the big leagues on a consistent basis. If that's the case, then that's fantastic, because, you know, then when Salvi does come back, obviously it's good because it'll help him. He's there to help him ease in a little bit more. But then this goal that we've always had, you know, of, okay, Salvi should get, you know, 100, 110 games or so as catcher, and then the rest he should be DH. That's pretty, you know, then if you've got that option in house to where you can say, okay, 40, 50 games of the year, Cam Gallagher's going to be behind the plate, and you're not going to lose a ton. You're only going to take a small step down. That's valuable to have that information. But I do think, especially with, like you said, with the young pitching staff that they have, and, you know, specifically the starters, the Jacob Junises of the world and the Brad Kellers, it's good to have a veteran presence there. And, you know, when you have such an important player like Salvi and he goes down, a stabilizing a stabilizing figure in there is probably best to have. So I am always that guy with the eye. I've said it before, I'd be a terrible GM, because I'd love to just, you know, trade for a bunch of prospects, or if it's football or something, trade for a bunch of draft picks all the time. Because I'm always thinking of, you know, that for me, what I'm trying to think of what the reverse of a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, whatever the reverse of that is what I kind of feel like I would probably be. So I'm not exactly the best person in terms of what I think should happen in the scenario, but I always like to know, you know, what you have and give those opportunities and everything. So that's what I would love to see happen. But I do agree that it's most likely going to be a veteran. Maldonado makes a ton of sense. So, you know, that'll likely end up being what occurs. And, yeah, we'll kind of go from there. Who knows?
The other The other thing I would say on like someone like Gallagher is, you know, he, while there is some kind of the veteran thing is definitely the way I think the Royals would go and probably the way they'll end up looking at it. He's spent, you know, the last 3 years at AA or AAA. So it's like he's, you know, he's been around guys who are playing at a high level close to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's brand new. A lot of these guys who the Royals are looking at have probably thrown to him at those levels at some point over the last couple of years. So there's familiarity. It's just experience at the big league level that's lacking. Gallagher also, there's been a lot of pieces out there about how he is at framing. And, you know, when you compare, you know, Salvador Perez has a pretty rough reputation as a pitch framer. Gallagher's the opposite. Gallagher's got a really good reputation and in a small sample size has a pretty darn good rate. I think it's 3 runs saved in like 150 innings catching as a big leaguer, as opposed to like last year, the leader was 10 runs saved in like 750 innings or something like that. So, you know, if you extrapolate it, that's pretty good. Now it probably levels out and the small sample size noise, you know, evens itself out. But it's, I think it still illustrates that at least according to the framing metrics that we have now, he's pretty effective at that. And that's something that I'd be interested to see how the Royals pitching staff might respond to picking up a couple of extra strikes just on the fringe per game, just to see what happens, just to see what 2-1 counts become 1-2 counts because the framing of the pitch is more effective. That can make a little bit of a difference when you add it up over the course of a season, or if Gallagher played half the games over half a season. So that's interesting. I'm not sure. I cut you off a little bit. So I think you were going to say something else. So I'll let you get back to that.
Oh, no,
I go rambling on.
It wasn't anything huge. It was just kind of a final thing, but I don't even remember what it was. But that's an incredibly good point that you bring up about the pitch framing and how that's always been kind of a weakness of Salvador Perez as far as his defensive game goes. Maybe his only weakness. Now, yeah. Unfortunately, it
Ned
is.
Ned doesn't believe it, of course, because
right.
You know, Ned believes the framing stats on Gallagher. He doesn't believe them on Sal. Whatever.
Yes.
Fine. That's fair.
He believes them when it benefits, but not when it hurts.
Yeah. So fine. That's, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. He's not gonna undersell one of his star players. So I get
Indeed.
It. But it is something that, you know, has kind of been his biggest Achilles heel, if you will, for his career. And I am really interested to see what kind of a difference it would make, because we the metrics that we have to measure how successful one is at framing for pitchers, you know, it's very in its infancy, mm-hmm. if you will. So it's not super developed and we don't really know yet. It's one of those things that, and it was always kind of an afterthought first. You think of catchers defensively, you know, well, you know, how many pass balls do they allow? Are they good at blocking the plate? Are they good at, you know, covering the plate? You know, are they good at those snap throws, et cetera? Those are your classic defensive sort of scout type things that you look at. You know, what's the pop time? You know, how fast can they get that ball down to second base to stop that, to get that caught stealing? You know, all these different types of things go into that, those defensive metrics, and how from a scout standpoint, how a catcher is evaluated. But then there was always kind of that framing pitchers thing. And I'd say the last decade or so, it's really kind of, you can see it becoming more and more and more important, because as the more information we get, the more that this game of baseball is getting figured out, the more they're starting to look at every little tiny piece of it and see where can we get the most advantage in this area. And it's so much more helpful in baseball. And we've talked about this before, because with a 162 game season and 9 innings in each game and X number of pitches on average in each inning, you know, I mean, there's so many opportunities mm-hmm. over the course of a season for all these things that when you add them all up, they do make a huge impact. You know, I mean, in football, if you can say, oh, someone can add this to our, you know, maybe one, maybe two games in a season, will they once or twice in those games will that happen, and it may make an impact, it may not, it may end up being all for naught, you know. So it's so much harder to really kind of say, okay, well, we're gonna exploit this scenario, because the scenarios are so much they happen so much with so much less frequency in other sports. So baseball has that advantage where if you can find that small little piece, then you can make a big difference over the course of a season. And people are starting to understand that more. And that's why people have started trying to create viable metrics to use when it comes to framing pitches. But again, we're not quite there yet. But for what we have there, like you said, you know, Gallagher definitely has the better looks for it now, right now, than Salvi does. So I'll definitely be really – that's one of the things that, you know, I'm definitely not excited about anything that ends in Salvador Perez won't be playing baseball, because that sucks. But if I'm trying to look on the bright side, I'm excited to see, okay, you know, how much – because with Salvi, that's just kind of – he is what he is, and you take that piece of his game that he's not that good at framing pitches, because you know he makes up for it in other areas, and he does. But
yeah, he throws out 40-some% of the guys that try to steal on him, and he hits 20 homers every year.
Yeah, and he
he'll live with some pitch framing issues.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what his pass ball statistics are relative to the league, but you know, just from looking at my eye, he's good at that as well. And you know, the pitchers have confidence. You know, especially
when he was 20 years old in spring training, they loved throwing to him. So yeah,
because if you remember, like guys like Greg Holland and Danny Duffy, and I mean, they throw those massive curveballs, you know, that bounce in the dirt 10 feet in front of the plate. The reason they're okay with that is because of Salvador Perez, that they're okay with trying that type of a wicked curve. So that's, again, that's valuable as well. So, you know, how is that going to affect things? We don't really know right now. But then how is it going to help if someone can come in that has a better pitch framing skill? I'm really curious to see how that will play out. And then that'll kind of show, you know, it'll give a little bit more of an idea to people, like, okay, this is how much of a difference that skill makes. And even though we're okay with not having it when Perez comes back, it's like, okay, well, now we know. And so we can kind of look for this in the future. Maybe it's something that Salvador Perez, at this point, you kind of think he is what he is, and it's really hard to develop more, but you never know. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, if Gallagher can take three counts and make them 0-1 instead of 1-0, he does that three times a game, two times a game, you probably increase some element of winning somewhere down the line. It does add up. So I mean, I think that's interesting. I think Gallagher can hang as at least a backup regularly anyway. So I think, you know, the next 2 years he's definitely going to be a pretty regular backup down there. This year, I don't know if they do go with both guys. They might just platoon them. Valoria is a lefty. Gallagher, or at least he hits lefty. He doesn't throw lefty. I don't think there's been a left-handed catcher since like 1971. When it comes down to, when I was coaching Little League, we had one time this kid who threw lefty who wanted to catch, and we were like, we can't find a glove for you. Can you catch with a first baseman's mitt?
Make those?
Yeah, I they do, but man, they're rare. Like, it just doesn't happen. Valoria hits left-handed, so you could do a straight platoon that way if you wanted to, or a partial platoon and just see what happens. But as I was looking at stuff, there's an interesting comparison. So let's take a look at two players, and it's going to be clear who the two players are. But this player made his major league debut at 21 years and 92 days of age. In the minor leagues, he hit .289, had a .330 on base percentage, and a .402 slugging percentage, which included 22 home runs and 359 minor league games. This other player debuted at 21 years and 199 days old. He hit .283, got an on-base of .355, and a slugging of .409 with 23 homers in 350 minor league games.
Okay.
So the first player is Salvador Perez.
Okay.
The second player is Mavers Veloria. I'm not saying that Veloria is on the same track, but the Royals are really, really definitely high on him, which is why last year he went from A-ball to the big leagues, even on a part-time basis. It was right at the end of the year. You know, it's not like they were asking him to cover half a season, but they had added him to the 40-man roster pretty early. I think maybe a year before they even needed to worry about protecting him. And that put them in a position to call him up last year. So it's not unheard of for a player that young with some pretty limited experience above A-ball. Sal Perez in 2011 spent 3 months in AA and 2 weeks in Omaha before he got called up to the big leagues and stayed.
Speaking of Manny Pena, wasn't that part of the reason? Didn't Pena get called up and then he got hurt right in the first game or something? Or
that whole whole period, because it was Matt Trainer and Brian Pena were both up pretty much all year, and Trainer had a good year, but Trainer took that collision and he got a concussion, and so that caused them to call up Manny Pena. And then Brian Pena, his wife had a child, and so he went on paternity leave. And when he went to paternity leave, they called up Sal Perez, and the rest is history.
And Trainer Pena got hurt, right? And so that's why Perez got the start from that, wasn't it? I thought Pena got hurt as well. Maybe I'm just thinking of Trainer getting hurt and then Pena being gone, but yeah. Regardless, but, I mean, it was a weird
some
scenario.
Musical chairs in there, and it was some circumstances leading to them bringing up Sal. But I remember that spring training, Ned Yost was super high on Perez. He was like, he could catch every day in the big leagues right now. And the question was his bat. You know, Perez was never a top 100 prospect. He was, I think, a top 25 prospect according to like Baseball America. But there were always questions about his bat. He didn't hit for a lot of power in the minors. But yeah, he developed. I mean, he got there. And I'm not saying that Veloria, while being similar, is going to do the same thing. They're on fairly similar tracks, and the Royals feel pretty confident in him as well. He's hitting well this spring. You know, granted, he's played in like, I don't know, 9 games or something, 12 games it looks like. No, he's only played in 6. I'm looking at the stats. I mean, that's a small sample size. You can't really judge much off of 6 spring training games. But, you know, he's performed in the minors, and they had enough confidence to bring him up. It's not crazy to have a catcher up at his age. So, you know, they might go ahead and just try it. They might just see what happens, especially if Maldonado, you know, if he wants more than like $4 million, the Royals probably aren't going to go for it just because, you know, what are they really playing for? I mean, the veteran presence is nice, but if they feel comfortable, they feel comfortable. I don't, you know, there's not much steering them off of that. If the Royals, they're pretty stubborn. If they feel like they don't need to make that move, they're not going to make that move. So, you know, they can kind of set the terms, and Maldonado, if he doesn't want to do them, well, he doesn't have to play till, you know, some other team has another injury, and, you know, then it's the whole thing for him. So, you know, they don't really have reason to blink in that particular game of chicken. But I still think that they'll get something done, just because it would be nice to have Veloria play a good chunk of time in AAA, get that everyday, you know, experience at a higher level than Wilmington, and just see what happens. And maybe have an eye of him as one of those guys to help relieve Sal Perez down the line, or maybe he's the primary guy that you have by the time MJ Melendez is ready. Melendez should probably be in Wilmington next year. He's probably still a couple years off. He's, you know, kind of times out right for him to take over for Perez. But if not, maybe Veloria, they figure it out this year that he could handle it. And that's kind of what they've got to be evaluating right now, is like, all right, how badly do we need a veteran versus just going with guys that we really trust who feel like they belong at this level and can perform at that level. And you know, that's tough. I mean, that's always the question, I guess. But they're in a position where they have two guys who have some interesting attributes that they could just stick with and see, and just kind of let it happen, see what goes along, and not worry about how long they actually have played at the big league level, and just, you know, figure it out, see what they can figure it out. And if they do, excellent. And if they don't, well, you learn that now, and you can adjust later and see what happens in the next couple of years. So it's an interesting question. It's I'm not sure. There's some part of me that does kind of want to see them go with the young guys just to see the opportunity. Like you said, you know, just something new, give it a shot, see what happens. But I wouldn't hate it if they went and traded to get Manny Pena and start that again. Francisco Pena, he's on a minor league deal with the Cardinals too. He's someone they can go with who's also a former Royal. And the Cardinals, you know, like I said, they have Matt Wieters in camp, and of course they have Yadier Molina. So there's going to be some kind of a crunch there as well. So I think if the Royals want to be patient, they can probably wait about a week and a half or so, and you probably start seeing some of these guys become pretty available. But if they want to stick and see what they have, that's certainly an option too. Then they might just go along with that.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a really interesting comparison. I didn't realize how close they were so early in the career between Valoria and Perez. So that's really interesting when you bring that up. And, you know, I mean, we all remember when Salvi came up, you know, it was immediate. Boom. We knew he was a stud. He was a guy. He's going to become a star in this league. I mean, what, he had those three pickoffs or whatever in his first game as a pro.
A go-ahead RBI.
Yeah, I mean, people didn't know what kind of arm he had. Even, you know, you hear the stories and you kind of get the scouting reports on minor league players, but you don't really have a sense for how it plays on the field. And people learned really quick.
They tested him, and yes,
and
they learned.
He passed with flying colors. So, you know, it's certainly possible, not to say that someone like Valoria is going to be Salvador Perez, just like you were saying. It's not to say that he's the same person, but it's one of those things where if you give him the opportunity, maybe he seizes it, you know. And because we just talked about what had to transpire for Salvi to get, and he was thought of as the catcher of the future, so he was going to get an opportunity regardless. But when he did get that opportunity, it was unexpected, but he made the most of it, and he seized it, and he never looked back. So, you know, sometimes that's all somebody needs is an opportunity, and they take full advantage. You never know. That could be this year for one of those guys. I would like to see it, but
I think it'd be cool just to have that kind of surprise of a player you didn't expect to have a big role become a pretty significant contributor, and something that, like, oh, didn't expect Cam Gallagher was going to play, like, you know, all-star caliber defense all season, or that Mabrys Valoria would somehow hit 12 homers and hit .275 as a 22-year-old rookie. You know, maybe those things will happen. Maybe they won't. But, that they're in the realm of possibilities is pretty interesting. And
it makes for a fun story, and would be especially fun, you know, in a season like what's coming up, where we know it's not going to be super exciting. But something like that to see develop always definitely adds a little bit of fun to a season, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Just some of those surprise guys you didn't really expect much out of, if they can figure out a way. Well, there you go. That's pretty great. That's why a lot of this game is really enjoyable. Those guys that just get a shot and they do something. Whit Merrifield got a shot, now he's awesome. It's great.
Boom.
Super cool. He's playing right next to Adalberto Mondesi, who from day one was supposed to be a star. You know, that's how it goes sometimes. So I think that's kind of the biggest question. Well, one of the biggest questions, you know, that's going to happen this spring training. There's a lot with, like, the outfielders and how things are going to shake out. But really at this stage, yeah, it's kind of, okay, how are they going to handle the loss of Salvador Perez? And they have a lot of options. So they're in a pretty decent position to either evaluate guys or, you know, go pick out whoever, almost whoever they want. off the veteran stockpile once some of those guys, you know, become available or it's clear they're not going to make teams. So the Royals are in a good position, you know, at least as far as finding a way to manage the season after losing their all-star catcher. It's not a good situation, but it's like if it's going to happen, they're at least in a position where they have a lot of options, a lot of ways they can go without really being stuck with anybody.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was going to say as well, where it's nice that they know that there is something, somebody that they can put there that's not going to be just a total nothing. You know, like there's, whether they go out and get somebody or whether they have somebody in house, they have options. Whereas, yeah, you know, the Royals have been in some positions in past seasons where somebody will get an injury or somebody will get an injury or something.
Hurt and they get Humberto Quintero, who was miserable. It was a terrible year for catchers that year.
So
he was no good.
Can't be underestimated how great it is to have any options. So is there anything else to add on this topic?
No, I think we pretty much rung out about everything we can on the catching front. Let's see. The only other thing I would say maybe is that Maldonado last year, he was traded from the Angels to the Astros, and the Angels got a decent top 30-ish prospect, a left-handed pitcher, in return and some international slot money. So he had some trade value when it came down to it. So there's a little bit of that kind of extra value baked in. But for the most part, you know, the Royals, I think if they're looking at Maldonado, it's get a veteran with some, you know, high quality defense in there and hope he hits enough to bat eighth. That's kind of what it's going to be. Like, you know, you're going to finish your lineup with like Dozier, Maldonado, Hamilton. All right. You can probably live with that.
Yeah. There are worse things.
Yeah, it's you do what you can with it, and if he gives you a Gold Glove caliber season, then fantastic. You're in a good position. And maybe you flip him in July, and then you go with Gallagher and Valoria the rest of the way. See what happens. So, you know, they're in a good position if they can get Maldonado or not.
Yeah.
They're not in a bad position. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, well, that's a better way to put it. Yes, yeah. I like that.
Yeah, they're not devastated. They don't have to trade a decent lefty prospect like Kevin Chapman in 2012 for just
a body.
Two rough players. Yeah, there was, God, I still hate that trade. 7 years later, didn't even matter. Chapman hadn't done anything at the big league level. Still,
principal. Exactly. Principle here.
Humberto Quintero.
Yeah. So that sums it up for that, and then we'll kind of wrap up with this final topic here, which, you know, we won't get super in depth with, but, you know, Danny Duffy has apparently had another little small setback. You know, he's been having some shoulder problems, so just kind of worth noting. The assumption is, and Ned, you know, usually doesn't come out until we get a lot closer to the season and say who the opening day starter is, but as long as he's on the team until proven otherwise, Danny Duffy is assumed to be the opening day starter. So the fact that, you know, he hasn't even pitched yet this off season, I mean, we're talking about this before the show. I mean, we're 3 weeks away from opening day here, and you know, the Royals just Duffy has not pitched, and even some of the other, you know, the Jake Junises and the Brad Kelly, like they haven't really pitched much either. So, you know, if Duffy's not ready to go opening day for some reason, you know, the anticipation is that he will be, but if for some reason he gets another setback and he's not ready, you know, that they who knows who will be ready. It'll be, I'm not sure, but it's, you know, it's just, it's unfortunate because it's starting to feel, it's not the same situation as like a Kyle Zimmer, because obviously Duffy has been able to be somewhat healthy, but it starts to feel that same way where it's like, okay, every time you try and think, well, maybe there's a little bit more reason for optimism. Maybe something's going to click with Duffy. Then he gets some sort of another setback. He either has a really bad month or he gets injured or something. So, you know, it's starting to again feel that way where just, you know, can't catch a break when it comes to Duffy. Cause we've talked before about how we think that there's still another gear that he can catch, but it's he's running out of time on that, where at some point he just is what he is. And, you know, I think this is kind of the last year that I'm holding out any hope that he's more than what he's shown, because I know he can be. Yep. So it's a little disheartening to see. Again, doesn't mean that he's not even going to be ready for opening day. Who, you know, doesn't mean any of that. But it's just, it's never good when that kind of stuff comes out and when you hear talking about battling injuries, especially someone like Duffy, who's had a history of injuries and everything. So
yeah, and shoulder injuries recently too.
Yes.
So he had, that was a couple times last year that popped up. So shoulders, you'd rather not have a shoulder injury, because they haven't found a great fix for shoulder injuries yet, especially nagging ones. So yeah, it's worrisome. I mean, it's, they say he's good to go, should be fine, you know, and all that. But it, you know, it is still like, until he gets in a game and you see what he does, it's kind of difficult to really, you know, buy in just yet.
Yeah. So, I don't think there's a whole ton more to add on that one.
Not on Duffy, no. But, and I mean, we're only really 2 weeks into spring training. It's just so weird that it's opening day is so soon that it just feels like, oh my God, like nobody's in there. But like, I think the team leader in games pitched already is only like 3 games. So, I mean, it's like, nobody's really pitched that much,
mm-hmm.
but it's still like, well,
they're still in like that one inning a piece.
Yeah. It's just like, we're still in the 2 innings per for starters kind of thing. Oh, that's not right. Jake Stammon is pitched in 4 games after today. So,
well,
or did I say Jake Stammon? Josh,
yeah.
Stammon. Not Jake.
There you go.
Where I got Jake. And he's pitched well, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk and 5.1 innings.
There it is.
I'm not going to say Kyle Zimmer's stats because it'll jinx it. But some of the, you know, some of those guys, those young players, they pitched pretty well, at least so far. So that's kind of good. You know, you got,
there've been a couple of nice little of potential surprise. Nothing that it's still too young yet to say.
Yeah.
There've been good surprises, but some potential for some good surprises. You know, and one of the main ones being, you know, Bubba Starling has had pretty good time,
yeah,
so far. He's been killing it offensively, so don't know if it means anything. We've seen lots of players have really good spring trainings before and just nothing happens, but you know, this is it for Bubba Starling. I truly think that, you know, it's kind of a last chance. I think the team's gonna give him every opportunity this spring, maybe give him some major league time this year, and if nothing comes out, then I think that's the end of the road for him. So you know, hopefully he's starting to take advantage of it.
He's doing everything so far. I mean, he's hit 2 homers. He's walked 5 times. He's got 8 hits and like 17 at bats. By all accounts, he's saying the right things. It seems like he's taking more of a kind of shortened 2-strike approach to heart. Yeah, I mean, go figure. You give up on guys like Kyle Zimmer and Bubba Starling, and then that's when they finally put it together. I mean, 2 weeks of spring training, so there's a lot of time. But I mean, they're putting the Royals to a decision, and they're doing what, you know, like best case scenario for them would be to come out and have really good starts to spring. And now you keep it going, and then, you know, in 2.5 weeks, the Royals have to start to figure out how you can get these guys on the team to start the season. Man, that'd be a heck of a story. That'd be pretty fun. You know, opening day 2019 doesn't mean a ton beyond being opening day. But if you somehow got Kyle Zimmer and Bubba Starling on opening day, you know, they both maybe made their major league debuts on the same day, like years after you expected them to. That's kind of cool. I mean, it sucks because it took them, you know, took Bubba 8 years to get there and Zimmer 7. But it'd still be cool.
That would definitely be cool. It'd be, again, just more good stories in a season that is likely to be uneventful.
Yeah.
is nothing to complain about. Certainly.
Look for the stories, not the scoreboard this year.
Yes.
I think is kind of what it's going to be like, which is, you know, that's kind of where the Royals have to be, you know, see what happens this year and see who's interesting and what pops up and kind of go from there. So, you know, so far in the spring, those two guys have done pretty well. And that's interesting. So hopefully they keep that up and make it more interesting by the time we get to March 28th. And then we just see what happens.
Hopefully indeed. So I think that's all we're going to cover. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I do not. I'm okay. Out of notes.
As he shuffles his papers?
Yep.
Indeed. So, all right. Well, that's it. That's all we have for you this week. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and we're getting closer and closer, probably a couple more shows, and then we'll be resuming our likely resuming our every week shows during the season. So that'll be happening soon, but for now, still the 2 weeks. So we'll be back in a couple weeks, and our over-under show will be soon. So be on the lookout for that.
Over-under fish fry and crab boil.
There you go. The Jamboree.
Extravaganza.
It's there every year. So it's one of the more fun shows. We'll definitely, that'll be coming up before the season officially starts. So until then, thank you all so much for listening. We love you so much. Couldn't do this without you. We will see you next time. And until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook under the title Kansas City Baseball Vault. And be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed already, you can find us there as, you guessed it, Kansas City Baseball Vault. If you have any comments, questions, if you want to say anything, it's a free country. Email us at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. Thank you.